Welcome to Sorted, a podcast for creatives by creatives. I'm Emma.
And I'm Alex. So get your coffee ready and let's get sorted. Hey friends, and welcome back to another special episode of Sorted. We are super pumped to have our guest Jason Craig on today. Jason is a dear friend of ours, and he is a local designer, an independent designer based out of Augusta. He does everything from design, painting murals. He speaks at a lot of conferences and has a really big network in that sense. So we are just so thrilled to have him on the podcast today. So Jason, I will let you take it away and give yourself your own little intro.
Yeah, I'm Jason Craig. I am an illustrator, graphic designer, and muralist in Augusta, Georgia. I also like to go speak at design conferences and tell people my opinion about stuff or share my experiences and I don't know. As long as they let me talk, I usually don't shut up. I'm also a cruise enthusiast, so that's pretty much most of what I do. Also,
I love it.
Love baseball and some other things that I'm interested in.
That's so what fun. Made us want to have you on the podcast was we heard Jason speak at a conference that Alex and I went Creative South, and so we were like, we have to have you come on the podcast.
I think season two or season one we like mentioned him in a podcast, and something that you said when you spoke at the conference, and then at the conference this past spring, whenever it was, we saw each other again. We were like, hey, we mentioned you on our podcast. And you're like, what? And then now here you are. You're actually on it. Full circle.
Yeah, I think we've seen each other at several conferences.
Yeah.
All over. Yeah. And I think what it was my differentiation between independent designer versus freelance.
It was. Yeah, yep. That's exactly what it was. And it was that aha moment for Emma and I. We were like, wait.
Oh,
what? Jason was reading our mind this whole time. This is the word that we needed to use. So yeah.
And I mean, it's just a word, but to me, it's almost like it's the difference between, I don't know, pilot or navigator.
Right.
You're both flying in a plane, but one person seems like they're in charge of where they're going. And that's, to me, like independent designer, you're in charge of where you're going, and freelancer, it's, you're going to take whatever you can get. And so that to me is the way I look at it. I don't apply it to every single human, but that's what I apply to myself.
Right. And I think that
I love it.
That scratched the itch that we were having, where freelancer kind of has this not negative connotation, but kind of like we're literally scraping pennies off the ground and trying to get any job and everything, versus independent just feels much more stronger. And it feels like you said, like you're in charge and you're not letting these little jobs kind of pay your bills and turn your lights on.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I hire people all the time to work with me, and that just doesn't sound like something a freelancer does.
Yeah. You're exactly right.
It's always interesting too whenever I introduce myself, I'd say something different. And every time I said something different, I felt like people would just be like, so you're a freelancer? And so I felt when I started saying independent instead, it really did give that like validation to what we're doing, and that we're, you know, trying to curate clients that we actually are proud of and that we're wanting to work with, and you know, everything. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I still have this thing where I don't have so much of an issue saying what I do, but whenever I tell people that I do it for myself, I immediately follow that up with like, this is not an endorsement for working for yourself. Mm-hmm. I never want to give anybody the impression that I would tell them to go work for themselves, because it creates its own sets of challenges that I don't feel like everybody is ready for. And before you go giving up the infrastructure and the all the stuff that a regular 9-to-5 has, this thing, can you also replace those things? And most people can't, and it's difficult. Like I'm sitting in an office at my house that I don't think you would know is in my house if I didn't tell you. But at the same time, if I was in an office building, my office would look just like this. So I've set myself up to sort of be a 9-to-5. As opposed to, I have friends that still work on the couch and work at coffee shops and work at the dining room table. And I'm like, I need structure. I need parameters, and I need boundary lines and all those things that are going to make me and keep me successful.
Right. Because it is like you can go on all the cruises that you want, but then you also right. have to have that structure in order for your business to thrive. Because if I was just sitting on a couch or working from a different coffee shop every day, I would just never feel like I was getting stuff done necessarily. Mm-hmm. I would kind of just feel like I'm floating and like, oh, I guess I'm getting projects. I guess I'm making money, but I'm a structured person. And so I feel like when you work for yourself, you kind of have to have that 9-to-5 mentality, or like that your boss is going to walk in at any point. And are you self-disciplined? And there's all that right. background stuff with it. But I want to know kind of how you got started as an independent graphic designer and what led to that. Did you work for somebody else before and then you were kind of fed up, or tell us about your journey?
I've always worked for somebody else, and I always really liked working for other people because I enjoyed the satisfaction of leaving the office and not having to worry about it. But mm-hmm. more and more, I was taking that stress home with me, and eventually it just kind of got to a point where the outside work I was doing started to just kind of overtake the day job stuff. And I was actually really trying to avoid it for the longest time. For several years, I was trying to avoid being on my own. And then I was outside painting a mural at a bar that I'd branded. And the guy that owns it he's kind of shrewd, but he's really smart. And he's a very good business guy. And I'm just painting, and he just walks up to me out of the blue, and he just says, "Do you really think that you would make less money if you worked for yourself?" And I was like, no. And I just didn't have an answer, because and that was what he said. "Do you really think that you would make less money if you worked for yourself?" And I was like, "No, I'd probably make more money." And then he just walked off. And it really is just like, yeah. And I was like, and it stuck in my head and just kind of echoed for a long time. And so then it was just, now I was in this like conundrum where a client of mine is telling me that I should quit my day job. And he's a smart person that I listen to and respect his advice. And I didn't even ask for his advice. It was unsolicited. So obviously people are thinking this of me. But it wasn't until I was at Creative South and my wife called. And she had a conversation with friends of hers, and she was kind of venting, I guess, and was saying that, oh, Jason's never going to build his website, and Jason's bad at getting back with people, and Jason doesn't like to communicate through email and all these things. And what her friend said is that I'll never be good at that stuff, but I'm really good at other things. And so rather than worrying about the things that I'm not good at, let's focus on the things that I can do. And is that enough to sustain a business? And after looking at it like that, she was like, yeah, that probably is. And so she called me. And at that moment, it was like when the Grinch's heart grew two sizes too big.
Yes.
It was like that moment where I was like, oh my God, I can quit my job. And, but I didn't just jump right into it. I mean, there was like a long kind of thought process that went into it. I hired a financial planner where we kind of talked about my business model and discussed where does money come from? Where is the money going to go? How much am I going to pay myself? Which that was the hardest part too, because they're like, well, how much are you going to pay yourself? And I was like, well, I don't know, $1 million a year.
Right.
Like you can't, you know, it's like asking a prisoner how much freedom they want.
Yeah.
I mean, what else are they going to say?
Yeah.
And so it was funny because after I'd left my job and it was the first 2 weeks, and I get two emails and they're like, yeah, it's payday. You need to pay yourself. And I was like, I don't know how much I'm supposed to pay myself. And so I had to call a few people and really figure this out, because it had to be something that made sense. And so we just started like talking about numbers, like, okay, if you pay yourself, can you make at least twice that every month? I was like, yes, I can make this amount. And then it just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. And then I finally got to a point where it was like, yeah, I'm not comfortable paying myself that much. And then we've just backed it down a little bit. And the funniest part about it was, is once I figured out how much that was, and I was I was completely on my own and I paid myself for the first time, I looked at my bank account and the money didn't move from one place to the other like it was supposed to. And I'm sitting there watching my bank account and I'm waiting for my money to come through, and it just never did. And so I called the bank. And I was like, my money's gone. It just vanished. Like, it left one account. And it's not in this other one. I was like, I don't understand. And they're like, well, what, you know, have you went to the mailbox? I was like, what do you mean have I went to the mailbox? No, I'm looking at the bank. They're like, you have a check in the mail. You mailed yourself a check. And I was like, I mailed myself a check. I was like, I'm the worst. I was like, I'm going to fail at this. Like, I'm already doing everything so wrong. Like, I clicked on my bank account and somebody wrote and mailed me a check instead of just moving it. So right from the rip, I was learning about business. And that's really how I started. Now, the good side about that is I haven't missed one of those paychecks since.
It only took one time to learn. Yeah.
It only took one time. I mean, so from a lot of people, it takes them a while to get going. I was very fortunate that a lot of things that I didn't know would happen, like a lot of the clients that I was freelancing for, when they found out that I was going full time, they actually increased the amount of work they were giving me.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And so it really almost instantaneously, I was able to make what I was making before. And that was in like July of 2019 that I started. And when COVID happened, I found ways to continue everything going. I changed a lot of my process. And the past couple of years, I've actually tripled what anybody has ever paid me. So
that's great.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's something I love about your work, and something like the style. Well, your style of your work is so unique, but also something I love about what you do is you love the place where you live. And I think it's really neat how much of your work is in Augusta. Like, it's, I remember talking with you and you saying, like, yeah, I walked down the street and I see like four businesses that I did the branding for.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people like aim for national, like huge, you know, this stuff is cool and all, but it's so neat. I mean, Alex is the same thing. I live in a place, New York's just too big to do that kind of thing. But Alex kind of has the same thing where she has some places at Indy she's done the branding for. And I think just seeing that impact on your community of like making something more beautiful, you physically get to do murals and things like that. Right. It's just so neat and so like so cool and helps like, you know, revitalize your community in like a really cool way. So if anyone's listening, like, that's a takeaway is you know, your local community can be a big champion of your work.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, I think too, first of all, I grew up in a tiny little town in Illinois. And when I say tiny, it was 4,500 people. And we were the biggest town in the county. It wasn't like attached to, you know, I didn't live in a suburb of Chicago. I lived out in the middle of nowhere. And so when I moved here, I just sort of took on a mindset of, rather than being stuck somewhere or taking whatever comes my way, I was going to actually shape my surroundings to suit me. And I would try to do the same if I lived in New York. If I lived in New York, I'd try to do the exact same thing. And I'd be like, New York is the best place, and I'm gonna spread like a virus here. I would do it anywhere. And I'd start doing it immediately. If I lived in Atlanta, I would do it in Atlanta. And I see people in these large cities that manage to do that. I see people put their mark on these giant cities. But that's it. It's part of it is that I do genuinely love where I live. And I think that it's a very unique place. And when people come here, I show them a lot of things that, and they always say the same stuff. They're like, we don't have this where I'm from. We can't do this where I'm from. There's too many rules where I'm from. Or we just don't have people willing to do the things that we do here. And that blows my mind, because those people are from like New York and San Francisco and Austin, and everybody that comes here, they've got a different experience, and some of it's kind of strange, but we don't notice because we're here doing it. Mm-hmm. And so it's normal to us. And honestly, there's 50 people just like me in Augusta. I'm just the loudest one.
Process like when a client comes to you, you know, and also what type of, you know, we kind of know, but for the audience, like, what type of clients do you work with? And when, you know, let's say a hamburger restaurant reaches out, what is kind of like your internal process like?
Well, first, I work with pretty much anybody and everybody. So I do have national clients, I have regional clients, and a lot of mom and pops and small businesses. So I do stuff for the Braves. I do stuff for Atlanta United. I've worked on huge campaigns for pharmaceutical companies. But the things I really like to do are like the the hamburger place or the pizza place. And my process is fairly simple and straightforward. First thing I do is I get them out of whatever means they text. If they text me or call, hit me through Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is, first thing it's like, you need to send me an email. I have to have a trackable, accountable form of communication that I can look back on. Instagram Absolutely. Messages disappear really fast, and text messages just get lost. So I need to get this through email. That honestly will weed out 90% of the real clients versus the not serious people. Because if somebody can't just send you an email, that's a huge red flag. And so if I say, send me an email, and they immediately tell me what they want, it's like, you couldn't have followed just the simplest instruction. I don't think this is going to be a good fit. Once they do that, I get on a phone call with them and just kind of talk to them about what they want, get a good feel for them. I do have a form that I use sometimes, but I've got away from that unless it's just a complete stranger. And it works too. And on the form, it's got a few questions like budget and have you worked with an agency before, which I've found is a very important thing to ask people if they've already worked with an agency, because a lot of people that have worked at an agency, they're not calling me because they love their agency. They're calling me because they have been, you know, they have some kind of trauma from their agency.
They've been burned.
They've been burned, or I just want to know if they're just price shopping. And that's the thing too. I have a lot of people that just price shop, and I'll ask them, I was like, are you just price shopping? Because if you are, I'll just tell you how much I charge for this. And then you can use that information however you want, which I don't mind doing.
It's a smart question to ask.
But it's kind of sensitive. You kind of have to already feel that way before you ask them that. And you don't want to offend anybody or assume that, act like you don't want to work with them. And the most important thing is you don't want to act like somebody can't afford to work with you. Because I kind of treat everybody the same way at first. I kind of despise whenever somebody's like, well, this is Coca-Cola, so I need to charge them 50 times as much as I would charge the guy that sells Coca-Cola. And so I typically start treating everybody like they're Coca-Cola. And then if they're a corner store and there's two employees, then I'm like, well, that pricing is if you're a big company, but I can work with you on whatever your budget might be to an extent. I don't do anything for free or anything that's going to make it so that I have to go wait tables so I can do their branding. but I try to treat everybody very similar.
Yeah. I like that mindset of, like, I feel like a lot of times kind of what you said, people go like bottom to top. And I feel like the top down approach is kind of nice.
Yeah. And it can be intimidating for some people, but at the same time, I think that I genuinely treat my clients like they're very important and not, oh, this is an easy job, I'll just knock this out in a couple of days until the good jobs come. I don't look at it that way. I look at them like they are the good jobs, because honestly, a lot of the things that I get the most attention for that are the big national things, they take like 3 or 4 days to do. And a lot of times they're like, oh, we have a deadline of Friday, do you want to work with this huge company? And it's like, yes, I'll work all night so I can put this on my Instagram. But those mom and pops, they come back and you might work with them for months and months and months.
Yeah.
And so really, if I had to pick one or the other, I'd pick the small businesses every day without a question.
And that's like where the referrals come from too.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And there is one thing about those referrals is, it's one thing to do a good job for somebody, but then you do a good job for somebody and then they see you in a Braves commercial, they tell all their friends, like, that's the guy that did my stuff. And all of a sudden, it's like they feel real cool. And that's how I do it. Once the actual, like, process of the work starts, I always do like a deposit. Generally, it's like a 50% deposit. It depends, though. If it's like a thing that, to me, it's weird to have a 50% deposit. Like, if you charge somebody at the beginning of the month and then you're going to be done with their stuff in a week, and then either you got to know that they're going to pay you the following month, or just tell them right up front, be like, this isn't going to take long, so either I need to just get all of it ahead or something. But I do like a deposit deal. And the same thing with big things that stretch out. Like, I'll be like, this might take 6 months, but I'm not going to do 50% now and 50% in 6 months. Like, we're going to have some milestones in there because I can't just wait that long. I do sketches of everything. And I ask them too. I was like, do you want a big presentation or do you want to just... I was like, do you want a presentation on Friday or do you want to see my ideas on Tuesday? And 99% of the time, they say, I want to see what you got on Tuesday rather than wait for a big presentation. And some of them, especially if they've worked with agencies, they're like, I hate those presentations. I was like, I hate those presentations too. And like, I've had people tell me that they're like, we get so tired of acting like every slide is important and laughing at every joke. Like, we really just want to see what our logo looks like. And I was like, I'm with you on that. But I have some clients and they're like, we need to present things as close to final as possible, especially if it's like another agency I'm working for. And some people just don't have the same a level of imagination. And I've actually had people that I sketched some stuff out and they asked me if their final stuff was going to be in pencil. And I was like, no, wasn't planning on it being in pencil. But that process, once they approve sketches, it makes it a lot easier because now everybody's expectations are set. They know what they're going to get. You're not going to surprise them or shock them. And when you do the final work, it's generally a lot better than the sketches you showed them and they approved. And if you show them the stuff and they don't like it or they change the concept, you can be like, well, you approved these sketches. So now we're talking about a completely different job.
And that's I love that approach.
It works really well. It's hard to do. It's hard to show people crummy sketches because you're afraid you're going to like out yourself as a fraud or that you're not talented or that you're scamming them. But once
can't
you
draw,
kinda,
no.
Or can't draw, yeah. But once you get through that, once you kind of get through that and they really start to trust you because you're putting all your cards on the table and you're saying, this is my idea. And the best part is if they don't like your idea, it's just a little sketch. You can make another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. You didn't waste time going into the final, making the presentation look beautiful when in reality, like, they might not even love the sketch. And so it's like time that you spent between those two points could be crucial. And we had a guest on at an earlier episode in the season, and she does a lot of TikTok lives and showing people. She mentioned people like to see how the sausage is made. And this kind of relates to that of your clients want, they're hiring you because of your talents and your creativity. So it could be neat for them to see the sketches and see, oh, this is how you do things before it goes to the final. And so involving them throughout the entire path is a really neat way to approach that.
Well, there's a lot of things that over the years that I've watched happen that I don't like and I want to change. And one of the biggest ones is bullying clients. And this happens when, say, you have a big agency, and you bring people in and you do the big presentation, and then they just don't like what you did. And then there's this incentive almost to make the client feel like, well, that's because there's something wrong with them, or they don't understand design, or look around you, we're in this cool office, we know more than you. And really, it's just a financial decision. You don't want to go back because now it's going to cost you money. And it always tripped me out that anytime you would do a brand, it takes 6 weeks to get the first iteration. And if they didn't like it, it'd take about 6 hours for the second one. And it's like, that blew my mind. And so instead of having that long period of anxiety where the client wonders what you're working on, you're scared they're not going to like what you do, just involve them from the start and keep them involved. I tell my clients, text, if you have an idea, text it to me. And I say, I'm not going to respond to you in the middle of the night. But if you wake up in the middle of the night, instead of writing this down and waiting for a meeting to tell it to me, just text me immediately. And I will use that information to guide what I'm doing. Some of them don't believe me. But then once they do it, and then once they talked about working with me to other people, they're like, oh, no, he's great because you talk straight to him. You get to talk straight to the person making your stuff. There's no account executive. There's no filters. You just talk straight to him, and he will talk to you anytime. And if he's going to go on a cruise, he'll let you know first.
I love it. I kind of do kind of similar where I show like a sketch. My sketches are usually digital. They're not pencil. I also like showing that phase because if clients love that, they're only going to love it even more the better it gets. Like the more color you add, the more refined it gets. Like it's really exciting when someone sends back like, oh my God, I'm so obsessed with this at a sketch phase because they're just going to keep getting even more excited and more, you know, and when you finally show it up on those mock-ups or, you know, whatever details you show them in like the final brand book, like it's just going to get them even more excited to use this logo and have it pasted everywhere in the business. So I think that like having clients involved in the process like that is whatever it looks like for your business is like really, you know, vital to selling the to selling the end product in the sense of selling it, making sure that they actually like it.
When you do your sketches, Jason, how many are you showing them at once? Do you show multiple options, or is this like a one sketch for a logo and this is what I came up with and this is what it is?
So it varies. And sometimes I'll show a couple different things. And these are simple sketches. I mean, these are things I can do in like 5 minutes. They're not, sure. I spend a day on a sketch.
Yeah.
But like a good example is I had a very simple request, and it was to make a little monogram of a W. And I'm like, all right, I got to make a W. Well, there's a bajillion ways you could make this. And so I just start just, like, a lot of times I'll set a timer and I was like, I'm going to sketch for an hour. I'm going to make W's for an hour. So I make an hour's worth of W's. Well, I'm looking at all these, I'm looking at 50, 60 W's I just sketched, and I'm not feeling any of them. So I sketch another hour. I do 120 of them, and now I'm not feeling any of those. So I did another, I did like 200 W's. Oh, and I'm looking at all of it, and I'm like, I don't really, none of this is, I'm not feeling any of this. But then at the same time, I'm like, am I ever gonna? Do I really think that I'm just going to have this epiphany and invent a W that's never been done before, that all of a sudden it's just going to shine through? And so what I did is I kind of center myself and look back at my process and say, instead of toiling and just making W's till the end of time, I'm going to circle my five favorite ones. I'm going to take a picture of this, and I'm going to send it to the client. And he looked at it, and he circled two of the ones I circled, and he's like, these two we love. We can't decide which one's better. And I was like, really, those two? And so I fleshed them out in Illustrator. I vectorized them. I was like, yeah, these two are cool. And I sent those to him, and they overwhelmingly liked one over the other. And I was done. And the thing that was crazy about it is that had I not stopped and just kind of got over myself and trusted my process, I'd still be sitting here drawing W's, and I wouldn't be able to be on this podcast because I'd still be drawing W's because I was never going
to
find it.
And your client is happy. Sometimes your client has to convince you.
Well, it's so hard too because it's almost like you have to put on a different lens. Like, it's the same thing if you're working on like another logo that's maybe not a W, but just like a logo, and you've been looking at this same thing for hours and days, and you send it to your friend and they're like, holy shit, like that's amazing. And then you're like, oh my gosh, really? Like, no, I did that, exactly. Right? And so you have to almost put on just like a different set of glasses to view it as somebody who's never seen it before.
You do. And a lot of times, like you said, I have a distinct style, but for me, I don't always see it. I do things a certain way, but I don't have a thing I apply to everybody. And it's not until I put them all up on one slide and put different things side by side, and I'm like, not only do I have a style, but I kind of like my style.
Yeah.
And that's a funny thing because sometimes you look through people's Instagram and it's like, okay, this person does that. This is what they do. But I do a lot of different things. And some of it goes on social in my portfolio, and some of them, they don't. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because even a mural and that W logo and a publication I might make, to me, I can put them side by side, and it's like, yeah, it looks like I did all three.
Yeah. And you're probably having more fun doing it, too.
Absolutely.
Because you're doing a variety. Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like I can relate to that a lot because people say that I have a style, and I'm like, I don't have a style. Like, all my logos look different. And so I think it, for me, it was a matter of I didn't want to be known as having, like, everything looks the same. I was like, no, you know, I need to make sure all of my clients look different. But like you said, they're not the same. You can just tell that I did them because of the distinct style. They're not all, I don't put a certain halftone treatment over all of them.
Right.
There's not a distinct brush that I'm always using or a stroke width that I'm always using. But yeah, I do think that it's so interesting, that kind of light bulb that clicks, that you're like, wow, I do have a style and I like it.
A difference in like an aesthetic and a style.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas like an aesthetic is kind of that negative connotation of like everything looks the exact
same.
Whereas the style
And
you have to really look at them all together to really.
Yeah, I feel like I noticed that too at Creative South with a bunch of the speakers as well, like seeing their work and stuff and then realizing like, okay, it's not just me. Like, everybody has their distinct style that they like to work with, even though all of these logos look different. So I know, Jason, you are friends with a lot of designers from all around, just from all the creative talks that you do and just the network that you have. So how do you feel like you run your business differently from others? I know that when you spoke at Creative South, Emma and I really loved your talk because you kind of talked about not doing things like everybody else. You're kind of the break the rules type of guy. You treat everybody the same. Like, you treat everybody with kindness, and your clients and your friends as well. But how do you feel like you run your business differently?
The biggest difference that I have versus most of the people that I know is that I have zero retainer clients. And a lot of times when I tell people that I'm 100% project based, they really have to stop and think about that. And I think that what they think about is they think about where they would be without their retainer clients. And the reason for that is it's another one of those things that it's coming from that agency background where you would enter into a retainer relationship. And then it was like to see who could win the battle of who could either not work too much or charge more or whatever it was going to be, that there was always a winner and a loser on a monthly basis. And it was never equitable. Rarely was it equitable. And I actually recently, this year I had a retainer client for a while because this year's been kind of weird and I had to recenter some stuff and I took on a couple retainers that I'm out of now, but I did those for a while because the projects just, there was no urgency this year. There were still projects, but nobody was in a big hurry to get them done.
That's kind of been the feedback from everyone.
Yeah, it's just an odd.
Is that this year was like a little bit weird.
And I hope the next year changes, but that's the main thing that's different. The other thing that's different is just because I do have such a structure, I see a lot of people that they get a big client or they do a big job that pays them a lot of money. And next thing you know that you can see on their Instagram, they're posting that they just bought a new guitar or they bought a drum set or they bought something. And I'm not that way. I am an employee of myself. And whether I make $1 million this month or make $0, I'm going to pay myself the same. And then at the end of the year, I get bonuses and things that kind of counter. And then I also look and it's like, well, next year, do I need
That's
to...
That's how Alex and I run our...
It's like, do I need to pay myself more next year? Am I paying myself too little? And so I look at it that way as well. Because I'm really good at separating the money that I bring in as a business versus the personal money I give myself. I don't look at it as that it's all mine. I just kind of look at it as a business. And it gets tough sometimes with that.
Yep.
But I also just think that my general approach is one that not a lot of people take. And what I do is I've decided that I don't want to do anything once that I wouldn't do 100 times. And a lot of times that translates to people as, I only do the cool work. Well, everything's an opportunity to become cool. And so what I do is when I get the chances to do some big things, a lot of times we tense up and we say, okay, well, what would they like? What's the appropriate thing? And it's never, how can I be myself in this arena? It's always, what would they like? What will get this approved so that I can say I worked for Nike or so I can say I worked for Atlanta United or MLB baseball. And I just put myself out there. And so a perfect example is I get a call from Atlanta United. They're doing their season calendar. They want me to illustrate 1 month. And it's a month that the theme is they have a like a group that trains service dogs at the matches. So the MLS soccer matches are notoriously loud and rowdy. And so they train little puppies in all this chaos and noise to be like very good service dogs. Well, the dog's name is King, and that was basically the brief. And I was like, well, I'm going to need to put a fur coat and a crown and a big gold chain, and I want to put a big bling and ring on this dog. And the thing about it is I think that most of us would want to do that, but we don't tell the client that's what we're going to do. And we wish we could do that. And we're like, man, if I could do anything I want, this is what I would do. And I say, okay, if they let me do this, that's something I would want to do every single day. And so I just go for it. I just shoot my shot and go for it. And not only that, but I told them, I said, well, what are the other 11 months? Because I can do all 12 this calendar. And they laughed at it. And I was like, I'm dead serious. Well, then they called me back the next day. And they're like, were you serious about doing more calendar pages? I was like, yeah. And like, can you do three? I was like, yes, I can do three. They called me the next day. No, it was later in that day. And they go, can you do six? I was like, we're going to get up to 12.
Gosh.
I was like, we're going to get up to 12. I just know it. But I ended up doing six, and another artist did the other six. But I think what happens, what happens is we say, we go, and I've been told this is like, well, this client's important. We can't dick around because this one's important. We have to put our best foot forward. And I'm like, no. I'm not putting my best foot forward. I'm putting my Jason foot forward because I don't want imagine if you did a style that you didn't care for, you just thought it was what they liked, and then every pro sports team wants you to do that for them. And now you're like, I got this dream clients, but I'm stuck doing this thing I never really liked in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's just a leap of faith too, because all that work led to more work, and they all saw the stuff that I did, and they go, we want that thing. We want that thing that you did. We want you to put a crown on a dog and a gold chain and a fur coat. To me, it's the fur coat that's extra. The rest of it seems pretty natural.
Yeah, yeah.
But I approach fur wearing fur, approach everybody like that. And I have, like, I always say it's a lot easier to turn the volume down than it is to turn it up. And so I usually start on 11 and then have dial it back down a little bit. Because I just see so many times that we come out with something that's very bland. And then we try to make it fun with color. We try to make it edgy with a little side piece that nobody's going to ever see. And I just start at 11, and they go, okay, this is great. How do we kind of rein this in a little bit so that it is a brand? Or sometimes I'll do an entire brand package, and it'll have 50 pieces, and they will say, so which one is the logo then?
Oh, every time.
And I was like, all of them. Use all of
them. Yeah, use it all.
Use all of it. I think that that's how I'm a little bit different from my experience. There might be plenty of people that do everything the exact same way, but from my experience, it kind of goes against the grain of what I've been told to do and allowed to do.
Yeah.
You're a creative optimist. You see it with, like, the glass is half full in the sense of you can always turn it down, versus I feel like a lot of people start mild and they're like, we can make it better. We can make it pop.
Well, there's two things to that. And one is that I see everything as an opportunity. That's number one. No, there are no small jobs. Everything's an opportunity to be the best thing. Everything's an opportunity to win an award or whatever motivates you. But the other is, you have to be careful, because say that, and this happens all the time, you're talking about this big project, right? You got this big, huge project, and you're sitting there trying to price it. You're trying to figure out all the deliverables and the scope of work. And all you know about it is that it's big, right? And while you're thinking about it, they say, hey, but we need this email blast to go out next week. We need this invitation to go out in a couple days. We need this social media post pretty quick. And while you're thinking about what this job is going to be, you make this little piece to it that you don't think is that important. And then what ends up happening is that social media post or that email blast ends up dictating all the creative for the entire project, because that was the first touch. And if you don't take that first touch seriously, it could be the snowball that causes an avalanche. And now all of a sudden, this big project that you've been thinking about is all dictated by this email blast that you did in 5 minutes. So I would recommend taking the email blast seriously, because it might be the thing that it's the starting point of your entire journey.
Any projects that have come your way that might seem really cool, but you've had to turn them down because of reasons? Or do you normally detect red flags, like, from the get-go?
Yeah, that's actually the hardest part. The hardest part is I've got a list of people that is like, this is my dream client. And then I have this business brain on the other side that it's like, well, there's just things that I can't budge on. Some of it is timeline. Some of it is budget, but we have a lot. Yeah. We have a lot of freedom on our budgets. Time, we don't. And I will never bump one client for another. And so there's plenty of times where I do have to tell people that, look, I know that you want this thing in 2 weeks, but I can't do it for 6. And I tell them, I was like, look, I can recommend another person to you. And when another project comes up, I'd still love to work with you, but I just can't do it. And there have been several where it's just like, I would really love to work with this company, but I just have to walk away from it. A couple of those opportunities are I hate to be those cliched people where it's like, oh, I can't talk about that one. But there's been a few pretty major things that have fell through the cracks that for one reason or another, it was like things that would put me on a completely different level as a designer or as far as recognition goes. And they just didn't work out. And so it was like, I know I have the knowledge. It's like I was this close to doing something that would have been the most epic thing ever, and it just didn't work. And that happens with businesses large and small, and it happens with mural stuff all the time. You know, with murals, I don't really want to travel and paint somebody else's logo on a wall. There's a lot of people that can do that cheaper. But if somebody says, I love this thing that you do with your murals and we would like to have one, then it's a lot different. So for instance, I'm traveling to Orlando after this, and I'm gonna the rest of the week I'm gonna be down there painting a mural. And that's another thing, is that even though I love where I'm at, a lot of times I do have to travel to completely fulfill everything that I need from my job. I can't do it all in Augusta.
Yeah.
And I mean, and what's funny about that is I'll make Augusta merch and I'll sell more of it out of Augusta than I do in Augusta. And that and that's the part that really blows my mind. And I did it this past weekend. I was at a conference in Atlanta. I took all my stuff and did a pop-up shop and sold out of almost everything. And if I did the same pop-up shop, it was crazy. If I did the same pop-up shop in Augusta, I'd probably do well, but not like I did in Atlanta. And I know a lot of creatives that they don't compromise on stuff like that. Like, they stay in their lane, as they say. And I try to stay in my lane, but I'm driving on an 8-lane road.
One of my dreams is to open a coffee shop, and the minute I open one, I'm flying you out to do a mural. Something about staying in your lane. It's not like it's still graphic design. It's not like it's outside of this giant umbrella, but it is interesting, because I feel like most people really do try to, like, it's just that same, the trope of, like, niching down constantly. I feel like that's, like, fed shoved down our throats as designers, and it's just keeping yourself open to,
well, there's a lot of aspects to it. It is about being open to stuff, but I think that there is a side to saying, okay, well, you want to be unique, so you're going to be the person that you make all of your logos by dipping a hot pepper in ink and drawing on wood. That's what you're going to do. And yes, that is unique. And if you can make it successful, then you'll be the only person that does that for about 5 minutes. Because once something is proven, then everybody is going to parody that, and everybody is going to try to duplicate that. And even though you might have been the first one to do it, most people are not sophisticated enough to say, that's what I want. It's like when you get a tattoo and everybody brings in a reference photo of another tattoo, instead of saying, why don't I go find the person that did this tattoo and have them do mine? Same thing with murals. Yeah. They come in with 50 reference photos, and sometimes I'll be like, you know, 4 of those references are the same person. You should hire that person. And so I don't think that having this one thing that you do is wise, because it's almost impossible to own all the time. I mean, you can ram it down people's throats. I mean, if you see thick lines, you're going to think Aaron Draplin did it. But there's a million people doing thick lines. And it's just difficult to own something unless you constantly work at it and you constantly build a lot of support behind it. You can't just be the person that draws skulls and think that that's going to be all you ever have to do.
Right. Well, not only that, but also just, like, getting burnt out of a specific style or of a specific thing that you're doing. Like, it might be sustainable now for the next couple of years, but if you're still an independent designer 15 years down the line, you're going to be like, what have I been doing all of these years? Like, I need to, you know, broaden my aesthetic and my style.
Right. And I see that too. I see people that they get in this style, and then when they want to change, it's almost like they're going to get bangs or something. You know, it's like all right, everybody, I'm going to start putting wavy lines into my work. I hope it's well received. And they put out a couple things, and if it doesn't get as many likes, then they backpedal and they're like, okay, the wavy lines phase was a bad idea. And it's just like, man, do whatever you want. Do whatever your clients want. Whatever makes you happy, do it. Who cares?
One of the things we like to touch on in our Destro episodes is your actual physical workspace. And I know you mentioned earlier that you have an office space in your in your home. But can you tell us a little bit more about, like, what your setup's like? Do you always, I mean, you kind of mentioned it, but you always work from your desk. Do you ever go to the couch? Do you ever, you know, switch it up a little bit? What's your desk?
So at risk of, people always tell me that I'm a very humble designer person. And so I'm going to have to take that hat off for a second, because I had certain milestones that I wanted to meet whenever, every year I set a new goal, basically. And if I meet that goal, then I kind of reward myself with a certain thing. Well, the first one was, once I made a certain amount of money in a year, then I was going to get rid of all IKEA, anything, all pre-made, all anything that was not real, basically. And so I did that.
Yeah.
Well, my whole office is like, well, first of all, my desk is this giant desk that like a president of a country would probably sit at. And it's just gigantic. And it's all like wood and brass, and it's like my dream desk. Like if I could just invent my own desk, it'd be this one. But it's I don't know what it's called, but it's like a custom made giant huge desk. And
I'm obsessed.
But yeah, the way I got this desk is I was trying to get it for a long time, and it was this deal where it took like 10 months for them to make it. And I was just like, never. I was like, 10 months. I was like, I'll just wait. Maybe I'll find a desk I like in the meantime. And then a client of mine, I went to his house, and there was just sat the desk. It was just like sitting there. And he's like, there's your desk. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I'll trade you a mural in my house for this desk. And I was like, say less. I was like, yeah. Say less. And he even helped me move it up here. It weighs 10,000 pounds.
Oh my God, I love it.
Desk. If I move out of here, I'm not taking it with me. It's staying here. But yeah, and then I have an entire wall of bookshelves because I'm a big reader and I buy a lot of books. So I have a huge wall of bookshelves. And then behind me, I have a wall of shelves, which has, you know, talk about being humble. It's got a couple awards on it. Like love a thousand. It. Like a thousand. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But these are the most important ones. These three right here are little cruise ships that I have won for various important things, including a pumpkin carving contest, which I dominated on a cruise ship.
Oh my God.
All right. That's
Jason's
true.
Jason's been on a cruise for over 100 days. Or like... combined has been 100 over 100 days.
I've only won three awards. Now, that is much more difficult than all these others combined. Well, then I have another thing that is my super prized possession in my office here that, I got two things. I'll remember the other one. But I had another milestone, and this one was I commissioned this painting. There's these artists in Ghana. And they paint movie posters, and they paint them. They've never seen the movie, but this gallery in Chicago has them paint movie posters. And so you'll get like a Purple Rain poster, but Prince will have like machine guns and look like Rambo or something. Or it'll be like E.T., except there's like aliens from the movie Alien in it too. And so I got this Glengarry Glen Ross painting. And so I have like all these dudes like staring at me all day, and Alec Baldwin was like a set of steak knives, which is like second place if you don't do your job good. And so I have this giant oil painting to my right, which I don't think I can turn my camera so y'all can see it, but I'll send y'all a picture
of it.
That's
hilarious.
So I got that. And then finally, the biggest thing that I was super happy about is I'm a huge baseball fan and I'm a Cubs fan. I work for the Braves a lot, but I'm a Cubs fan. And so I got the exact paint. And I don't mean like the color of paint. Like I literally got the paint that they use to paint the scoreboard at Wrigley Field, and that's what I painted my walls with.
Wow.
I spend most of my time in here. I spend most of
my
time.
That's a true fan.
and so I really have it tailored to be a place where I really want to be serious and be happy and do stuff. And think about working in an office where like somebody else picks the music or somebody else chooses how many pictures you can have on your desk or anything like that. And I was just like, if I could do it my way, what would I do? And I don't think I would change a thing at this point. Like, I've got it pretty much dialed in. And I have a Herman Miller chair that I won at a design conference.
I love it.
Wow, what a prize.
Yeah. Oh, so
that's a prize right there.
It was called TopCon in Chattanooga.
What conference?
Truth be told, I didn't win it. I stole it from somebody that did win it.
Well, hopefully they're not listening.
He knows I stole it because I said, didn't you fly here? I said, didn't you fly? Oh, I drove to Chattanooga and he flew. That's how I did it. So I was like, didn't you fly here? He's like, oh, yeah. I was like, how you get that chair home? And I was just like, he just realized that it was going to be a pain to get the chair home. And I was like, let me take that off your hands.
That's just it. I love it.
I love it.
Well, we love to end off our guest episodes with rapid fire. So we're going to ask you a few questions, and you have approximately 0.5 seconds to think about your answer and let us know.
Okay? All right.
You ready?
Let's do this.
All right. Podcasts or music while working?
Oh, music, definitely. I don't have the attention span for podcasts.
Okay, what's your favorite program to design in?
My favorite pro, well, okay. So to design in all time, it's InDesign. Even though I don't get to use InDesign nearly as much as I'd like, it's my favorite program is InDesign. But I would say that Procreate in general is the one thing that I really use the most these days.
Do you have a favorite font?
Oh, goodness. It changes all the time. I mean, I like basic stuff. I like my favorite font is Hobo. That's what we'll say. That's my favorite font. If I could sneak Hobo onto anything, that I would be happy.
What is your favorite color?
Favorite color? Well, black's not a color. I'm gonna say like a mint green. Like my website's like riddled with this like mint green color, like teal almost.
What's your favorite desk accessory?
I've had this little Shriner pencil holder guy on my desk for like a million years, and he just kind of sits there and stares at me too. I got a lot of eyes on me at work. But I would say this right here. I don't know why I even have this, but it just sits there. Like everything else has changed.
I love it.
He's stayed.
He's here for a long time.
Yeah. For anybody that's not looking, it's a pencil holder, but it is a little man in a fez holding pencils.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. What is your favorite workday beverage?
I just drink black coffee all day.
All day.
And I don't day drink. I don't drink at work. I don't allow myself to drink alcohol at work.
Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not judging anybody. It's just a choice I've made.
And then to end off, what is your ideal Saturday?
My ideal Saturday? I think we all know what my ideal Saturday is, to wake up on a boat where I can't see land and go sit by the pool and watch the sun go from one horizon to the other without doing anything and then go back to bed. That's my ideal Saturday.
Okay. Do you like the tanning aspect of it?
Yes.
Like the relaxation? Okay.
All of that. But yes, the tanning aspect. Yes. I have the brownest legs in the design industry. And I don't just mean for a white person, I mean for everybody.
I think that needs to be your next award on your shelf back there.
Tannest legs.
I'll make it for you and mail it to you.
Do it.
3D print that right up.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on Sorted. I'm going to listen back to this episode because I feel like I took so much away from it. And I'm sure people will want to follow you on Instagram and get in contact. So take some time to pimp yourself out. What are your handles, your website? Where can people find you?
Yeah. Well, first let me thank y'all again. And let me tell y'all, I've met y'all so many times at so many different things. And it's funny because I feel like I kind of, there's people that I've met and are acquaintances with, and then there's people that I've like went and hung out with and like eaten with, and whenever I'm like, when we're at some like big after party thing and I'm like, oh, y'all follow me, like y'all have followed me places so many times and I hope not regretted it, but it's like
never.
You never know where the road leads, but y'all have always impressed me so much, because like, Emma, you make everything sound so easy. You're like, I graduated from USC and then I just moved to New York and run my own thing. And I'm like, how did you just do that? Like, what do you mean you just moved to New York and now you're just doing this? Like, how is that possible? And Alex, same thing. Like I felt like I had to get away from the Midwest to be successful, and you're thriving in the same place that I was like, there's no way I could have been okay there. So y'all are always impressing me. And that's why I was happy to be on this podcast, because I mean, I just watch y'all and just wonder. I'm like, there's no way that I could do what they're doing in the way they're doing it. Like, I can do it here. I can do what I'm doing here. But I was just like, I can't just move to New York and just, like, I have so many questions. Like, I'm about to start a podcast just to have y'all on it. But yeah, so
we already named it for you. Breaking the Rules with Jason Craig.
Right,
there we go.
You know, social media is what it is. I haven't posted as much lately because I don't want to spend an hour making a post that 30 people like, and I'm not ashamed.
Like,
I'm not ashamed to say I prefer to get likes than to not. And so, but Instagram's still the best place to reach me, and it's Jason the 29th. Also, I've been using LinkedIn a lot too, and I think I've got a lot of people on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn's kind of like the new Instagram. Mm-hmm. But yeah, hit me up, and I always try to help people and answer any questions or just say hey or follow me or whatever. And then if I'm at a design conference, don't be afraid to just come up and be like, let's go eat Korean French fries or whatever the hell we went and ate that one time.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Thank y'all so much.
For more Sorted content, follow us on Instagram at sorted.pod. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know by leaving a review. It means so much.
Sorted is hosted by Alex Pizak and Emma McGoldrick. Produced and edited by Carrie King. Marketing and graphic design by AP The Creative and ESM Creative Studio. Photography by Hannah Hunt. And music by Dam Dharmawan.
Huge thanks to all the people that made Sorted happen, and to you for listening.
See you next time.